Yes, hello folks, welcome to the weekly Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Phil Brand. I know the last time I recorded this podcast, I said I would not be recording by myself anymore on the weekly podcast. That's still going to be the case, but I'm going to make a special exception today because obviously the Mason Greenwood announcement happened a couple of hours ago. And this is a topic where I don't want to have an open forum discussion on because I don't want to get dragged down alleys into this extremely sensitive subject and say things clumsily or say things I haven't thought through properly that I can never take back. Truthfully, I'm not qualified to talk on this subject at all. So most of the things I say are probably not even worth listening to. But nonetheless, I feel a sense of responsibility to at least clarify some of my tweets on this topic. It's provoked two different types of reaction. I've been criticized from people who think I'm defending Mason Greenwood, and I've been criticized by people who think I'm attacking Mason Greenwood. I'm actually doing neither, but I'll explain what my thought process is behind those tweets. Also, obviously, I'll talk a little bit about the announcement, what's in the announcement, and you know, United obviously decided to walk this back after the social media reaction, I talk a little bit about that too. I got some information on Saturday, more or less confirming that this was going to happen, so it wasn't a huge surprise. There's still some vagaries about the statement and what it actually means, and I have some cynicism towards it, maybe unfounded, maybe not. And I have some comments on the unprofessionalism from United in litigating this entire issue on social media and using it as a barometer to make decisions when they really should know better. This is not the first time the club has done this. Of course, we know we did this with the Super League. They did this with Marko Nedovic. It appears the only time that social media and they're immune to the reaction on social media is when it comes to the defenestration and removal of the owners, apparently the Glazers. Don't think that applies to them, it applies to everybody else. anyway, interesting statement from United. They said they had made a 6-month investigation, concluded that investigation, concluded that Mason Greenwood had exculpatory evidence that he was not guilty. Didn't say he was innocent, but said not guilty of the charges levelled against him. Nobody really knows what evidence they're in possession of. All we really know is the evidence that was put online. I think United have made a couple of key mistakes in this whole process. I said this before in this podcast, one of them was teasing this announcement. When they said, we're going to make an announcement 2 weeks before the start of the season, that to me was insanity. Because it inevitably provokes certain reactions. It now makes it a talking point and it brings everything back to the surface again. The leaks about consultant sponsors, which they surely did. I mean, any responsible business would be doing that. Especially when you've got your main shirt sponsor trying to get out for a year. You'd be insane not to be consulting with your main commercial partners who would be definitely affected by this and have a position on it. Especially at a time when you're going through a protracted sale and the appraised value of the football club, which depends heavily on its commercial appeal, would definitely be affected by this. As I said before, I believe the Glazers kicked this issue down the line in February in the hope that this would be new owner's problem and not theirs. But now they're forced into making the decision because Mason would have had to have been registered by September 1st. And of course, this is causing major fractures behind the scenes with staff and like I said, you could see it with the players. Like I said, mistake number one was teasing the announcement. Once they also claimed through leaks that they were consulting the women's team and consulting sponsors, you now forced them into publicly making an announcement and a statement and taking a position, which was insanity to me. I'll get to my cynicism on this in a minute, why I think this happened. Of course, the other thing is when you litigate something like this on social media, you have to realize what social media is. So the larger accounts on social media, they usually are working for somebody or usually working for major media outlets and are being paid to amplify certain views that are commensurate with the editorial policies of the outlet they're working for. For example, if you work for the Daily Mail, you most certainly are not amplifying liberal talking points. Right? That's just a fact of life, and it works in reverse too. So before someone with a large account whose income depends on certain type of their reputation and what have you, they're thinking of the following things. Because I know I work for large media outlets and I know exactly what happens. They're thinking, one, is this consistent with the editorial policy of the outlet that I work for? Two, is this going to harm my reputation? Three, how is this going to launch my audience? Four, is this something that's going to come back to bite me a year, 2 years, 3 years from now? They're also thinking about the relationship with the subject matter. So they're protecting access, all that stuff. This is not quite a non sequitur, but for example, the Manchester Evening News refused to send a reporter to cover the Barry Bennell trial, a notorious pedophile, because they wanted to protect access with Manchester City. They will deny that, but that's a fact. That's true. They did not send a reporter to cover the Barry Bennell trial. Of course, there's quid pro quo goes on. They want to protect access and what have you. So there's a lot of filters that censorship filters that goes into a tweet from a large account typically before you see it. So it's very rarely a true reflection of the views of the author, because that's not what they're paid for, and that has potential ramifications for them. And of course, it's the easiest point scoring virtue signaling opportunity in the world at the top end. Everybody wants the dopamine rush of being told what a great guy they are, a great human being, when they display their outrage. By no means am I saying that everyone who virulently opposed Mason Greenwood and the allegations that were levelled against him were superficial. I no doubt that a significant number of people genuinely felt that way and would feel that way no matter who the individual was. But there's also a lot of people out there who, you know, manipulating the algorithm, who are rival fans, who aren't giving an honest take on it. They're overlooking, you know, sexual predators in their own team. There is no doubt that when you ask politicians, for example, they're going to use it for their own personal gain. I don't want to make this a whataboutery podcast, but where it's relevant is evaluating the moral consistency of some of the people, the commentators, that have given their views on this. And for example, we have Labour politicians who support the incarceration of Julian Assange, who done nothing but expose war crimes, journalists being executed. Their previous leader of their party should be in front of the Hague for war crimes. They've shown no appetite for justice there, or anyone. So this is easy for politicians to jump on and say, I genuinely care about this, when we know that they don't. And they shouldn't be the barometer for your decision. Because if you give them an opportunity to hijack it, they will. You have Tory politicians that will be angry at Manchester United over Marcus Rashford embarrassing them during COVID. So they'll take an opportunity to chime in as well and pretend they care about these things when they don't. And so social media is a lot of preening, it's a lot of branding. It's really very rarely a true reflection of how people feel. A quick non sequitur on this is the 2016 election. Lots of people that were voting for Trump one posted it on social media. And people got the wrong idea, the wrong impression that this was going to be a complete walkover for Hillary Clinton. and it wasn't. So a lot of people don't post what they really feel on social media because of the social consequence of that. So it's really not a topic for social media because you never truly get an honest reflection of how people feel. You get Brandon. That's what you get. Of course, there are some people that do, but there's a reason why burner accounts exist. And those burner accounts exist so that people in important positions can tweet what they actually think. We know for a fact that the Glazers, for example, weren't adjudicating this along lines of morality. I mean, we need only look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the things that they do in the other walks of life. They drafted Jameis Winston, who 2 weeks after he was sued, he had charges filed against him, a lawsuit filed against him for sexual battery, assault, false imprisonment. 2 weeks later, the Glazers drafted him. They made seven-figure donations to an individual who brags about sexually assaulting women, who was found liable for sex crimes, and who defended an accomplice of one of the most prevalent pedophiles in the United States, Ghislaine Maxwell. Wished her well. Certainly didn't perturb the Glazers' moral compass to donate seven figures to this individual. So we know that it wasn't based on their moral indignation. I question the purpose of doing an investigation at all if those findings are completely irrelevant when making your decision. I said before that investigation should be based upon the following principles. The uncompromising guiding principles of the football club. What's consistent with law and what's consistent with precedent. Those are the things that should determine the outcome. And if you genuinely believe Mason is innocent, and that's what the evidence shows, then it's quite difficult to justify moving him on. Obviously, fan opinion matters. Of course it does. But you could engage fan opinion 2 weeks after the incident. If that's a determining factor on whether you keep Mason Greenwood or not, that decision should have been made a year and a half ago or a year ago. But it wasn't. Again, this illustrates the people that run this football club were completely unfit to do so. What was interesting throughout this process is there was high-level leaks going on over the last 2 weeks, illustrating United's process behind this. That, to me, seemed like reputational management from people on the inside. And what they were making sure they made clear was that this was a Glazer decision to delay this. Whatever you think of Richard Arnold, he's not stupid. You know, he would have wanted this decision to be made. And of course, their reputation is being tarnished. And rightly so. If they want to take, they're exceptionally well paid, if they want their reputation to take a hit for defending the people that own this football club, because ultimately it falls back on them always. Because they're the ones that hold executives accountable for doing their job. And if these people are still in high-paid jobs, you can one only assume that they're in high-paid jobs because they're doing their job exactly how the owners want them to do it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. Players are held accountable. Other staff are held accountable for their performances. Who holds Richard Arnold accountable? Who holds the Glazers accountable? Where are the Premier League in all of this? Why are they so impotent with regulation and making sure owners respect their duty of care to the football club? You know, we go through a fit and proper test, but surely they should also pass a competency test, so that these football clubs are protected from this type of absentee ownership. See, when we talk about City and the 115 charges, the biggest reason, even if City never financially doped, United would still not have won anything. Because their own incompetence is the biggest impediment to any type of progress. They have their own entropy. Second season, after finishing the Champions League, this team has the same listless look. Why is that? We're confronted by the incompetence of the people that run this football club at every turn. This football club is bloated with players on wages that are nowhere near commensurate with the market value that they can't get rid of. How was that allowed to happen? Why did they give David De Gea a $350,000 contract? Harry Maguire a 6-year contract? Why? Did no one else in world football would pay, not even the Saudis? Moises Caicedo turned down for $4.5 million. He's now going to and broke the British transfer record 2 years later. Jude Bellingham couldn't convince him to come. Two best young midfielders in world football, probably. Haaland couldn't convince, well, didn't want to worry about the release clause fee. How irrelevant is that release clause fee now? And seeing ineptitude. You know, the fans are entitled to better competence. They're entitled to people that not just recognise the responsibility of the Glazers, but recognise the responsibility to the reputation of this football club and its values. See, United and City are playing different games. Everything that's inside City is designed for one purpose. I don't mean to get off topic here, but it's designed for them to win trophies. Everything inside United is designed to be profitable. That's the determining factor of success or failure for the Glazers. And that's how you get massive financial waste. Rank incompetence because the people in key positions in United aren't there because they're exceptional at running a football club. They're exceptional at running a business. And I would even question that. So here we are again with this rank incompetence. Erik ten Hag was told that Mason Greenwood would be reintegrated back into part of his team. Now he needs another striker. Of course, these are, you know, minuscule concerns compared to the bigger issue. But again, no preparation, no planning. Because United planned on having Mason Greenwood instead of planning without him. Saying, look, if he comes back, he comes back. But there's a high probability he won't come back because we've had consultations with fans, fan groups before this, and we've got a good gauge of what their reaction is going to be. So let's plan accordingly for this potential outcome. Of course, they don't. And then there's the statement. Because I'll tell you what that statement reads like. That statement read like, Mason's not guilty, so therefore we can justify selling him. Not sacking him. Now, there's probably legal aspects and reasons why they can't just sack him. But that statement wrote as a justification for being able to sell him, and it read as an advertisement to potential buyers. You're not buying someone that's guilty of a crime. So we need to make sure we protect his value, of which we don't even know what that is. So it's almost certainly going to be a loan with no obligation to buy, because it's impossible to appraise where he's at right now. Because if you turn around and Mason Greenwood goes out and has an amazing season, scores 35 goals somewhere, United are going to want $100 million for him. Easy. What if the loan club, Roma supposedly interested, Roma certainly wouldn't be able to pay that fee in a year from now. Do you need to bring them back? What if they can't find someone who's willing to pay that fee? Well, I mean, there's so many variables to this it's unclear, it's opaque. So, that to me is what it read like. It was a statement that justified selling him rather than sacking him, and trying to any potential buyer would have plausible deniability to say the kid's not guilty of anything. You know, they just want him out because it's a toxic atmosphere at the club. Very, very, very disappointing in how United have handled it. And I think we're entitled to better. And I'll tell you something again. This is just an observation, but the body language of those players at the weekend was extremely concerning for any United fan. They went behind in that game against Spurs and didn't look like getting back into it. Didn't look like they had intent, no creativity. And they looked like players, looked an awful lot like players under Ralph Rangnick, that had a broken relationship with the sport and objectives of the football club, that didn't believe they could accomplish them. Last season, Ten Hag turned that around through signing Casemiro and Anthony. This season, it's not quite sure how he would do that. I warned against this a couple of weeks ago. I said if United had a poor start, things could get nasty very, very quickly. By no means a certainty they'll beat Forest. If Arsenal away, this could get really nasty very quickly. There's also the Anthony situation, which is extremely serious. And with precedent, United are going to have to decide, do they do exactly the same with Anthony that they did with Mason Greenwood? I would imagine they do. You know, if you look at the allegations that are made against Anthony, they're extremely serious. And allegedly backed by some hard evidence. Can the Glazers afford to suspend another £100 million winger? I don't think they can. You just wonder what type of conversations they're having with all of these looming nightmares. Because make no mistake about it, this heavily affects the commercial value of the club. And if it precipitates a collapse inside of morale, team spirit, everything else, then all that optimism they've accomplished under Ten Hag will disappear immediately. And it'll once again get very dark. They're on a really dangerous precipice. And if they did that, it would hand the initiative to potential buyers. Because all those speculative variables that the Glazers were talking about Champions League money and, you know, television money and all that, that's all predicated on United actually being successful. I don't know if the Glazers, and I said this, that I didn't think the Glazers would go into the start of the season not having some type of announcement on the ownership, because I think it would be a really risky game. And I hate being right on these things, but if Rain and people who have a clue about what's going on in football aren't saying to them, you need to sell this club right now, because you don't have to be clairvoyant to see what's coming. And I believe that if they did sell it, they'd reinvigorate people and save the football club. There'd be renewed optimism. But if they don't, I mean, you can't tell me FFP is a serious issue when you have Chelsea spending close to £1 billion in two windows. It's absurd. Three. There's workable ways around it. I have no doubt that FFP is a consideration, but there's workable ways around it. I don't know. I mean, it's a major, major, major concern. And this is not going to be an easy thing to emerge from, because when you have issues with morale, when you have issues with players feeling disillusioned, disconnected from the club and its ideals and everything, those are systemic issues. Those are very, very difficult to fix. And even if you bring in a new player or two, they'll adjust to their surroundings. So this is very, very difficult to recover those things once they're gone. Marcus Rashford has the body language of a player that doesn't want to be there. That could change. That's a big concern. And I don't believe it's because he's been asked to play striker. It looks to me something much bigger than that. Concern and storm clouds on the horizon, and once again as a consequence of the ineptitude that infests that office. Unless you have synergy between the playing side and the business side, you cannot be successful. And we get temporary synergy and then you need to get in the wrong way. They always find a way to make a mess of it. And predictably, this whole Greenwood thing should have been dealt with long before this. Right at the end of the season, but not affecting the start of the season. Talking about not announcing it before a game on Saturday. You announce it well before the start of the season for the same reason. So if you come to this conclusion in June that you want to move him on, you have time to prepare. Not the last week and a half of August. It's absurd. So lots of reasons to be concerned. And again, this is a very difficult sensitive subject that I'm not really qualified to speak on. There's an awful lot that's being circulated on WhatsApp and private messages that I'm not going to share or believe it's appropriate to put on here. It's stuff that is quite concerning going forward, and I really hope that this football club can navigate the way out of this mess. And in my opinion, Richard Arnold should resign over this. I'm not serious. I don't want to be dramatic, but what happened with United getting their reputation once again dragged through the mud unnecessarily is unacceptable. It's a really disappointing outcome. In terms of the way they've handled it. I just think the United deserve better. So that's my views on it anyway. I hope this isn't too much of a fucking mess, this podcast. Like I said, I hate talking about this on social media because it's not the right platform to have this conversation. And I'm always mindful about people who suffer from domestic violence, reading that and thinking that there's people defending Mason. I don't defend anyone that inflicts violence on another human being. There is no defense of that. Or sexual assault or coercion or anything like that's totally unacceptable. Alright, folks, listen, hopefully, like I said, we get back to later material going forward. We'll probably get another podcast out later on in the week with my new podcast partner. Hopefully get something out today on that. Let you know who that's going to be. Some of you correctly guessed who it's going to be. I haven't had time to put it together because but some things going on in the background here, notably some horrendous weather and stuff. Hopefully we can get that buttoned up and put out over the next few days. So for those of you who disagree with me, I love you no matter what. I'm not saying I'm right. I don't know if I'm right. I'm probably not right. And I have that humility. I really hope that we don't go through this again with Anthony, because I'm exhausted with it. I just want to watch 11 men kick a ball in the net on a Saturday and not deal with all these other variables, all these other issues, off the field issues. I'm just so sick of it all. All right, folks, take it easy. Thanks for listening.